Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Technology Leaders.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Technology Leaders, brought to you by our friends at Band of Coders. Stone, how you doing?
Good afternoon, sir. I'm doing extremely well, particularly because I just had a large espresso at a Lon's, complimented by that, what was it called? Like a fruit cake?
It was a Danish. Danish-like thing.
And I would have fallen right asleep, but the large espresso kept me up. I
got excited about that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be a fun segment a little bit later in the program. We are going to get a chance to visit with Mark Seeley. He's a CEO with IntelliNet. And we're also going to talk with Nancy Treister. She's Senior Vice President and General Manager of Strategic Operations with Verint. But first up, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce to you Managing Partner with Tech Square Ventures. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast Mr. Blake Patton. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Stone and Lee.
Well, we're delighted to have you, and you should be thankful to me and our underwriters, Band of Coders. They're the ones that make this show possible. Well, them and the marvelous, passionate, insightful guests that we have every week. So we really are glad to have you. Tech Square Ventures, get us caught up, man. Mission, purpose, what are you out there trying to do for folks?
Yeah, so Tech Square Ventures is a seed and early stage venture fund we just launched about a month ago. And so what we do is we look for very early stage technology companies in the information technology and connectivity sectors and to invest in those companies.
Now, how is Atlanta rank in your mind in terms of groups like yours? When you're looking, like, you could have done this fund anywhere. Why Atlanta?
Yeah. Well, so when you think of venture capital, certainly you think of other tech hubs like Silicon Valley and Austin and Boston, you know, the Northeast. But you know, we've got an amazing opportunity here in Atlanta and in Georgia and really in the Southeast. You know, we've got world-class research universities. Mm-hmm. We have loads of talent, and you know, there's just an enormous amount of energy and opportunity here. And probably the one thing we are behind on is access to capital. And so that's why I thought it was a good opportunity. You know, Georgia has less than 1% of the national venture capital share. And that's not, you know, anywhere remotely reflective of the amount of opportunity and activity here. So I think it's an advantage to be here.
Now, why do you think that is? Why do you think we lag in that area when we are as strong in other areas?
Yeah, you know, it's a good question. I don't know that I have a magic answer. You know, I think what some of those other areas have done an outstanding job at is built very strong ecosystems around their startup and technology companies, and so they've had large technology companies support them, provide them capital, provide them talent, you know, provide them early customers.
So when you say large firms support them, it's like a big company happens for what, you know, it grows,
right,
and it becomes big, and now it has a lot of wealth. So now there's a bunch of people serve that company now, right? Or their executives spin out.
Yeah, executives, they've sought out innovation, they collaborate with the startups. And why I think it's sort of Atlanta's time is, you know, what has always been our strength from an economic development standpoint is our large base of Fortune 1000 and mid-market,
right,
companies, right? And so it's no longer just the technology companies that are looking to drive innovation that way. You know, increasingly it's across the board. Large companies are looking to drive innovation outside their four walls. And so they're out there engaging in all of those ways with startup companies. So I think Atlanta and the Southeast is positioned very, very well, you know, for the next 10 years.
Now, when, like, an example of that would be like McKesson was here. They spun,
that's right,
there's a whole ecosystem built around former McKesson people, you know, wannabe McKesson people, like, right? There's a
that's exactly right. And in fact, you know, you could argue Atlanta is now one of the leaders in healthcare IT.
Right. And that was kind of the catalyst, right?
That's right.
If they were in Birmingham, the healthcare IT might all be germinating in Birmingham.
Evolve,
right,
out of there, right. And so, you know, in terms of why there's less capital here, I think there's been lots of, you know, arguments, and until last year, you know, there were you know, some disincentives for, you know, that our public funds can't invest.
Oh, right,
in
for the
funds,
pensions,
yeah,
right?
Until recently, and even though that's changed, it's still not as maybe smooth as it should be. So you know, there's a lot of reasons, but I think that's going to change. And again, I think the opportunity we have here in Atlanta to bring those things together is just enormous.
And then when you have somebody like David Cummings with Tech Village, that's an important statement on his behalf to do something like that and really invest in create an ecosystem.
Right, and it's an important statement, but it's also a really important and key part of a healthy technology ecosystem. You have a really bright, passionate, smart entrepreneur, has some success, and what he's doing now goes back and contributes.
But he's reinvesting in the community. He could have taken that check and been in the Bahamas.
Yeah, playing golf, right?
Right?
Playing golf, that's right.
But so that's what we need is some of these entrepreneurs to come back and reinvest and not leave the area after they do have some level of success.
Yeah, and David's certainly been the most visible recent one. But, we have lots of those entrepreneurs. Some of those that have dove right back into building their next startups and maybe not gotten as much attention. But I think, I think Atlanta is at that kind of tipping point where we're several generations into cycling through entrepreneurs that have had those successes. Even companies that came out of kind of the dot-com boom spun out a lot of today's technology entrepreneurs, that had success in those companies, and they're now building new companies. They're investing in other companies. And so, I think you're exactly right.
So can we hit the brakes for a moment and do our due diligence? Because we're going to have an opportunity throughout the conversation to learn more about the kinds of things you may choose to invest in, really get a handle on your commitment to business radio platforms. I know we want to talk about that. I know everybody's excited about that. But I'm thinking maybe a primer on venture capital versus angel funding. Can you just kind of give us the primer?
Yeah, give
on
us
that?
The lay of the land of what are the funding options for a startup or a small business.
Well, maybe it's easiest just to start at the beginning. And most of my comments are going to be relevant for technology companies. But when you first get started, it's your credit cards, it's your friends and family. It's if you're lucky, your rich uncle, and you get as far as you can on those kinds of sources. But there's still a gap when you get to the end of that. Between what you need to build your company, and you're not yet mature enough to be attractive to traditional financing methods,
like a bank,
right? Or even more mature private equity forms, and so in that gap comes venture capital, and venture capital funds are private equity funds that invest in early stage companies. In my case, technology companies, and we go out and we raise money, in my case from high net worth individuals, sometimes from institutions. And you invest that money. You look for those early stage companies, and you invest that money and get equity, ownership in the company. You help the company succeed and get them to that next level.
Now, in the mindset of a banker, say, he's not looking for a home run, right? He just wants that business to pay back the loan.
That's right.
He has a different objective than you have, right?
That's right.
You're looking for some sort of a multiple, or else it's not worth taking the risk. Is that accurate?
Absolutely. The venture capital, because of the risk, is certainly not as cheap as bank money. And so, we have to look for big successes because it's risky. We're lucky if a third of the things we invest in don't go to zero. So the ones that win have to win big. And the folks that invest in my fund, they look for, a 3x kind of return on their money. So obviously that's a lot more than you look for when you.
So like if you were looking at a portfolio, your job is to help build a portfolio of investments, right?
Mm-hmm.
To present to your investors.
Right.
And they're counting on you to pick winners.
That's
and
right.
Knowing that you're not going to be 100 for 100, right?
Yeah.
Like what's reasonable? Is it 30%?
You'd be in the top quartile of venture capitalists if a third of your companies kind of went to zero and a third went somewhat break even, and a third were your hits. They did kind of 5x return or higher. You'd wind up probably performing in the kind of top quartile of VCs.
So, but when you're vetting, right? So now you have these investments in front of you, or these companies.
Yeah.
In your mind, are you going, well, that one's probably going to be like a single, and this one's a home run, and you're just trying to pick home runs, or are you okay with kind of a range of, these guys could be the huge and be home runs and be the 10x, 20x, whatever. But these guys could kind of round out this portfolio. Maybe it can protect me a little bit.
Right. So, in all cases, I'm looking for a large market. The reality is it's extremely hard to predict at this stage. So you want to find really bright, strong entrepreneurs in a big, growing market. And when I was trying to explain to my wife, what what it was. I was
why this was a good idea. Yeah.
Why this was a good idea, which she was smart enough to question, is I compared it to buying a house. You know, when you look at these startups, you know, when you buy a house, you don't try to figure out how much the lumber's worth and the roof's worth. You compare it to the other houses in the neighborhood. Mm. And the challenge when you're investing in startups at this early stage is you don't really know what neighborhood you're in. You're trying to figure out what is the market opportunity here. You know, is this a match for the need that that entrepreneur thinks they're filling? And, you know, what's their competitive advantage? And then, you know, from there, once you invest, it's about, you know, it's about execution, and you can help, you know, you can help that with that, right? But the hardest part is to figure out what neighborhood you're in. The hardest part is to figure out that market opportunity and what is that need and what is that customer need.
Well, and you personally, and I guess you and your team have to be very effective in two pretty different worlds, right? You have to be able to navigate that world of the high net worth individual and institutions, and you got to be able to hang out with the crazy kid that's got this idea for just helping us all connect a little bit better and decide if that's a good place to put your money, right?
Yeah, it is. You've got two different constituents. You know, in my case, I'm very comfortable with the latter. You know, my background is I've been an entrepreneur. I've founded a company. I've run two other venture-backed companies. You know, one of them was an executive at IXL. You know, we took that company public. So I'm very comfortable, working with the entrepreneurs. And most recently, I headed up ATDC, which is Georgia Tech's startup incubator, that Forbes ranks one of the top 12 in the world. In that role, that's really what led me to this, to decide to do this, to start this fund, is in that role, I just had, a tremendous amount of fun helping those entrepreneurs realize their dreams.
And so now you think you can pick winners, right?
And
feel pretty cocky, don't you?
I tell you what, I can't tell you how many people have used that phrase with me and said you can't pick winners, but I'm counting on being able to at least spot the most likely to succeed. Yeah.
So what do you need and want most right now? Do you want to cultivate relationships with more high net worth individuals and investors? Do you want to get a bigger and bigger pool to draw from for people that you might invest in, or where's your energy and effort right now?
Yeah, my energy and effort right now is 110% on finding, my first investments. Early in a fund, it's important to get those investments early in the life cycle of a fund, because you have to, invest in these companies. They take a long time to mature and get to the point where they're liquid. So the first
In a VC's world? That's not a long time in a geologist world is different.
You know,
right?
You're lucky if it's 5 years. You know, it's probably 7 to 10 years. And so it's important that first 3-4 years to get your initial investments made. And then, the longer you go in the life cycle of a fund, the more you're focused on helping those companies succeed and advance, so that this investment you've made, because remember, I took other people's money, and I have to return it to them. And so at some point, that investment has to become liquid. So that happens when these early stage companies sell or, in rare cases, go public.
And one of the reasons that most of these folks are high net worth individuals is because they don't just put their money in a mason jar, right? they're used to seeing their money put to work, so you can't leave it there for a real long.
That's right. I think they do it for multiple reasons, too. I think, with a lot of the limited partners and venture funds, it's part of how they give back, and it's part of what they like to do. They like to see what's innovative and exciting out there, right? They might, depending on what business they're in, this might be part of their way of keeping their thumb on innovation.
Now, from the entrepreneur's standpoint, when they are going in front of a venture fund and they're asking for money, part of what they're getting is money, but part of it is also your brains and your Rolodex, right?
That's right.
I mean, money sometimes is easier to get than maybe some people realize, that there's people that have money, but people that have money and connections that can really open doors and fast forward my growth, that money has more value, right?
Yeah, the entrepreneurs that we invest in should absolutely expect us to bring a lot more than money to the table. They should expect us, to be able to help them, that we've been there, we've done that. We can help them find those early customers. We can help them find additional capital as they, graduate and grow past our ability to fund them. And to provide, connections and introductions. And so that's also why, my particular focus is information technologies and what I call connectivity. And so information's around internet, healthcare IT, fintech, e-commerce, those kinds of companies. And connectivity is connected devices, sensors, medical devices, you know, Internet of Things type. And the reason I'm focused on those areas is not just because I believe in that those areas from an opportunity standpoint, you know, over the next decade, but it's also because those are the areas I can help most. That's where my background, my expertise, my network, I can help them be successful the most.
And then the network can really, that could make or break an entrepreneur, right? Like you've probably at ATDC, you probably ran into this, a million great ideas.
That's right.
You know, but if they don't have that network and the group supporting it and helping it along, they could just die on the vine before they even get a chance to prove themselves.
Yeah, and you know, I don't want to take anything away from the entrepreneur, because at the core, right, it's they have to make this successful, and you know, we're betting on them, but you're absolutely right, and ATDC is a great example. When I was heading up ATDC, we launched a program called Industry Connect, where we would help connect them with early customers, and we brought in you know, large companies, and we wound up in the first year of that program, you know, startups getting 20 contracts out of that. And so that's a great example of how, you know, organizations, and same thing with investors, and it's not just ATDC in town. You know, you have ATV, you have Flashpoint, you know, we've got, you know, EI Squared and all sorts of other organizations helping these startups.
They're trying to nurture them to get them off the ground to see if they can fly or not. I mean,
yep.
It's hard enough as it is, but without this kind of support, it's almost impossible.
Right. And I think the point I'm trying, you know, that I try to make to lots of people when they say, gosh, how can we help you, is, you know, there's a lot of organizations in town providing that nurturing, providing that coaching and professional development. You know, there's, you know, a handful of us trying to help with the access to capital problem. But these startups also, you know, they really need, you know, they need customers and they need talent. And that's what more folks in Atlanta than they realize have the opportunity to help our technology ecosystem is, you know, take a bet on one of these early stage customers. You know, the companies, the logos we have in this town, you know, nothing can help them more than to go to market with one of these local companies.
Right,
as one
in hand with them. But you're saying like the larger companies, Cokes or the Deltas or the Home Depots, by just taking a shot and throwing some money at one of these things, even if it's a little, you know, $10,000, $15,000,
that's right,
that could give them a year or two of life to see if they can work or not.
Yep, not just does it give them life, but it gives them something much more important. It gives them
credibility. Right.
And so really key credibility when you're trying to sell to other big customers. You know, I mean, the reality of startups is they're kind of, you know, ahead of their skis the whole time, and when people look at them, they know that. And so if they see a big logo, that makes them feel better. They say, you know, if Coca-Cola bet on them, or if Home Depot or
now was
Delta.
When you were with ATDC, like you mentioned, that was part of an initiative that you guys were working on,
right,
was to get some involvement from the larger companies. Are you finding that they're open to that? Because that seems a lot of these larger companies, you know, they don't have time for that, or they buy already existing companies. You know, they don't really reinvest into startups.
Yeah, great question. And back to our first, you know, back to your first question, I think the answer is yes, and that's what's changing. And I think that, you know, increasingly, what I think for a long time, larger technology companies, they've sort of gotten it, you know, and they've worked with early stage,
right,
they've sought out innovation. What I think is changing now is the large companies are very proactively trying to embrace innovation, trying to look outside their four walls. You know, look at, you know, just what's happening in Tech Square. You've got these innovation centers opening. So companies like Panasonic and AT&T, you know, opening innovation centers to try to collaborate, you know, with that entrepreneurial community,
right,
and other companies to drive more innovation.
Is that part of why you're so bullish about Atlanta in the next 10 years?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you know, again, when you look at the resources, we've always had a lot of the key ingredients and the opportunity here. You know, if we bring those together, especially if you bring those together, Fortune 100, you know, we're unstoppable.
Right. I mean, that's a game changer. If you can really get those large Fortune 100 companies to invest in these smaller startups and technology firms, it's going to be no stopping us.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, combine that with, you know, the world-class research
right,
and talent is just,
and the airport and the port and all
right,
the other stuff that's in Atlanta and the Georgia.
I think, you know, that's sort of been, you know, part of the message is, you know, through ATDC, I got this glimpse into economic development in the state, you know, in the state of Georgia.
Oh, right, because that's also, there's some politics in ATDC, right? It's not just a startup hub, right?
That's right. But again, you know, what, and to your point, you know, while that's the case, ATDC, it's very clear who our customer is, right? It's sometimes hard to articulate the politics and who our stakeholders are, but it's very clear who the customers are. We all win, you know, if those startups are successful.
Right.
And so that part's easy. But to your point, you know, how do you measure sort of the overall economic development success. And you know, this is really important. You know, and the short answer to that is jobs. And you know, I think that's why you're seeing state and local, federal governments all kind of focused on entrepreneurism right now. The Kauffman Foundation came out with a report in 2010 that showed, you know, in the past 30, 35 years, in all but seven of those years, all new net, you know, 100% of net new job creation was from startups.
Wow.
And that's why it's important.
Well, you see these large, you know, the companies that have been around for a long time, they're shedding jobs by the thousands.
Yeah.
And that a startup might go, oh, well, that's only a couple people. Well, that couple people might turn to 10 people or 20 people or 30 or 200. And guess what? Those start adding up, those 200s, you know?
Yeah. In fact, that same report showed, you know, that's what people often say. Yeah, but don't 80% of them go out of business, don't they? Grow slow. But if you look sort of 5 years out, you know, 70-some percent of those jobs still exist. And to your point, you know, in all but seven of those years, existing companies were as an aggregate, net job destroyers. And so startup and innovation, and that's really what it takes to help make this a healthy region. And you know, one more kind of example of that was during at the peak of the recession in 2010, Austin, Texas, and San Jose led the country in job creation. And the reason was they had really, you know, deep, established, innovative, you know, startup ecosystems. And so, you know, I think Atlanta's positioned, you know, great for that. I think, you know, as an investor, I'm very bullish on Atlanta. You know, I love the entrepreneurs here. I think, you know, the those that say there's, you know, not a, you know, there's too much capital and that kind of thing in Atlanta, you know, are wrong. I'm betting on our entrepreneurs.
Right, and I think the capital is a little different here. Maybe we have some capital that was real estate or developer minded capital that mm-hmm. isn't the entrepreneur risk taker. You know,
right.
When you invest in real estate, it doesn't go to zero. Your right. investments go to zero.
Right.
You know?
Yes. That's
so
right.
That's a different mentality when it comes to risk.
Because isn't that where a lot of the old money in this Atlanta has come from? Was from real estate development, that kind of thing? Is that?
Yeah, I think that's definitely fair. It's and just more traditional forms
right.
of alternative assets and private equity. We it's certainly not true that Atlanta doesn't have a lot of individuals and institutions investing in alternative assets. It's just they haven't been investing in venture capital, and I think that'll increasingly change.
I have a gazillion more questions, but I don't have that much time, so I want to ask one more, but I want you to come back. Maybe with some of these folks that once you decide to invest
yeah,
in a couple.
I'd love to.
Maybe bring those firms on and learn about how and why you decided to invest in them, get them a chance to articulate what they're trying to accomplish. Would you be up for that?
I would absolutely be up for that, and that's actually who we should have on this show.
That's who we should be.
Right. You're getting ready to talk to, that's what you can do to help, you know, get them exposure.
Now, when the entrepreneur out there that wants to get a hold of you, do they just go to your website and then they submit
yeah.
an application? Like,
so,
how does the process work?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, the absolute best way is some sort of, you know, warm introduction. So I would encourage you, if you don't know anyone, to go to places like ATDC
mm-hmm.
and get them to help you get ready before you start getting introduced around and connect with me, or just go to the website www.techsquareventures.com and send
right. But
send
you're not looking
in.
For the guy with something on a napkin, right? You're looking for something that's already got some legs a little bit.
I'll go pretty early stage, but you know, you got to be all in. You got to be full time on it. You know, you got to made some progress and demonstrated that you're all in. So usually that looks like a prototype or some if it's
right.
coming out of a research university, there's usually some research and prototype behind it. So I'll go. Very early stage, but yeah, I'm not looking for
a great idea
yeah, or
that
a great
I had
idea
in
or,
a dream.
Hey, what do you think? What do you think about this idea?
Right.
That's what organizations like ATDC and ATV can
right.
help you with. Right. You know, once you're ready to build that thing and you need capital to do it, that's when you want to come
right.
talk to me.
Well, what a pleasure to have you come by, and we're quite sincere about this.
Okay.
We'll set that up, and we'll feature
here.
These folks.
I'll be
from
here.
Time
I appreciate it.
Yeah, you gonna hang out with us while we visit with our other guests?
You got it.
Okay. Next up. On Atlanta Technology Leaders this afternoon, we have with us General Manager EIS Strategic Operations with Verint, Miss Nancy Treister. Hello, Miss Nancy.
Hello.
So what'd you learn in that last segment?
Well, a couple of things that you might find as a direct connection. One, Verint bought about 7 years ago a company called Witness Systems, which was a startup in Atlanta.
Oh,
that
right.
grew to the
cool.
point
That's
of
how it works.
Yeah, grew to the point of 900 employees and $220 million before we got bought by Verint 7 years ago. I'm still there. Our division is over about $650 million out of a $1 billion company now. And all through, when I started, there were 30 people and about $1.8 million in revenue. So a true success story from Atlanta all the way through to a large organization. And the second thing is now I'm, through strategic operations, an acquirer of VC-backed businesses. So I buy pretty regularly companies that are either private equity-backed or VC-backed. As a matter of fact, we bought, just in our division, four companies last year from various sizes, from a small, you know, less than $10 million company to $140 million company, all which were either private equity-backed or VC-backed. So, you know, I'm on the receiving end now.
It's come full circle. Right?
It is. It's very fun, actually, on both sides. It's fun to be part of growing and be part of a successful venture. And then it's really fun to go back in there and find the ones that you think fit within a much larger vision and bring those in and include them in, you know, your value and what you bring to the table.
Now, when you acquire a firm, how do you integrate them into your firm?
So some of it depends on the size of the firm. So smaller firms, particularly we bought one this year that was very EMEA-focused out of the Netherlands, and one that was very Americas-focused. So we quickly fold those into our operations if it's that easy to bring them in, meaning they have like a consulting angle or something that's very specific to a region. If it's a piece of technology that we expect to implement or deliver globally, then it's a little bit more complicated situation because now we have to bring them in and take the expertise. Usually a small company is interested in being bought by Verint because we have 150 quota-carrying salespeople and they have one.
Right.
So now the first thing that happens is, how's their one going to deal with my 150? Got really excited about their new product.
Yeah, right.
So there's some very slow interim steps you have to take to help them find the most exciting and best opportunities first and hold everyone else at bay. I call it putting your finger in the dike, right? How can you hold your finger in the dike just to get enough water spilling over to get them successful?
Because that can overwhelm them, right, if it's too much too quickly?
Often. The reason they're so excited about being bought by Verint is because of the opportunity, and that's the reason I'm most nervous about it is because of the opportunity, especially if it's a really good one. Our salespeople can be really excited about some new stuff. So
can you please explain to Lee, because he probably doesn't understand, exactly what is enterprise intelligence?
Sure. So the division of Verint that I'm a part of focuses on solutions that help organizations manage their customer engagements. So often that starts in the contact center. So when you call a call center and you hear things like this call may be monitored for quality, recording, quality monitoring systems, how many people they should actually have on the phone today because of the expected forecast for the number of calls, emails, or chats that they expect to get, how they manage those emails and chats and social media interactions, to how they actually manage the agent desktop. So when the agent, someone's talking to you on the phone, do they have the knowledge to actually answer your question? So popping up knowledge based on the context of the conversation. And then into things like bank branches. So here in Atlanta, we have several of the large banks where how they forecast and schedule how many people they need in their branch to actually be available, you know, tellers and salespeople for the foot traffic they expect, things like that.
So in a call center, is there a right way to do things? Like, because there's like companies like Zappos where they'll talk to you like all day. You can have lunch with them and chat, right?
It seems that way.
And there's some that are, you know, they just want to get you on and off.
So it really depends on the strategy of the company. So when I like to think of it as whether their call center is an offensive part of their business or a defensive part of their business. Some companies, their whole strategy is they're about customer service. Mm-hmm. Zappos, perfect example. And so they put all of their time and effort into making sure that that engagement is as positive as possible because that is their differentiator. That's how they've chosen to go to market. Then there are companies that their whole go-to-market is to be the low-cost provider. And maybe the quality of that interaction is that's not how they're differentiating.
Right.
So it's really based on their strategy.
And so then you, as long as it's congruent, it's the right answer then.
Agree. Mm-hmm.
So is there a sweet spot, some verticals that really lend themselves to this more than another? And one reason I asked is my kid is interning for a political campaign. I just wondered if political campaigns even, if they use this kind of stuff.
Because it seems like they use the telephone a lot.
Right.
They do. That's outbound calling, and that's not quite as popular for the kind of management software that we're talking about.
Okay.
It's mostly, they'll use outbound calling for collections and things, where it's very very much a big part of their business. But most of it is B2C organizations, business to consumer, and most of it's business consumer organizations where your ability to change vendors or providers is very high. Uh-huh. So think of banking, telecommunications, insurance, et cetera, where you might actually be a high-value customer to them, but you could change very quickly if you're not
even
happy.
Like cable and
cables, big, yeah,
cell phones, like things
absolutely,
like that?
Absolutely. Utility companies, actually, right. These days. Some healthcare, travel and entertainment, like airlines and things like that as well. So your ability to use another provider if service isn't good is a big sweet spot.
So I'm trying to get my arms around the profile of a good acquisition target for you guys. Because mm-hmm. you got this piece pretty well figured mm-hmm. out, right?
Yeah. Well, we've been doing a lot of it for many, many years,
right,
to your
right.
point. So, for example, we bought a small company out of California in the fall that was focused on voice biometrics. So one of the big hot things that's happening is how much time do you spend when you call to do a trade, for example, with your financial provider, and how much time do you spend actually verifying that it's you? And sometimes, how much time do you spend verifying that it's you, and you can't verify it's you, and you have to go, like, write a letter or something because right. you're like, seriously?
That's the most frustrating thing.
Makes you crazy.
They're like, they ask you that security question that you don't remember the answer to.
Right. Yeah. Right. What was your phone number 15 years
right.
ago?
Right.
Was it this, or this? I don't know.
I need multiple choice.
Even if they have multiple choice, I got it wrong the other day. I'm not joking. I was not able to wire money because I got it wrong. I'm like, it really is me, I promise. So what's really getting hot in the market right now, because think about it, that interaction is happening most commonly in a contact center, and it's a telephone interaction, which is right in our sweet spot. And what people are starting to do is use voice biometrics to decide if it's you or not. So very big uh-huh. in the banking industry,
cool.
and particularly in bank credit card industry, where fraud is an issue. People are going in and actually taking your telephone call, running it through a voice biometrics solution to figure out if it's a known fraudster or if you have patterns. They use predictive analytics to figure out, are there patterns
wow.
that are more commonly associated with transactions like this, and is it highly likely fraud? And it goes to the fraud department before they issue that new credit card.
And then can they store your voice once they've determined you and then match it up?
Absolutely. So there's beginning to be what they call proactive voice biometrics or authentication. That there's a lot still to be worked out about that. Are you happy if they use your voice without
right.
telling you? So, but for using it for fraudsters is clear. Everyone's all about that. There's no question they run against fraud databases. Once they identify either it hits a particular fraudster or they identify the pattern is definitely fraud and the fraud department decides it's fraud, they add that voice to the database.
Wow.
And that becomes a part of the database they check against.
And your voice is like a fingerprint? Like it's unique like that?
Absolutely, completely
Even
unique.
Like an impersonator when somebody does those impersonations?
Absolutely, completely unique, everything. And even if you use a voice disguiser, they can't tell that it's definitely a fraudster, but I'd like to know how many people use voice disguisers when it's
and
them.
Not a fraud, right,
exactly. So we know it's a voice disguiser. That's about all we need to know on that.
Right.
So good example of a small company and just right in our sweet spot where it's technology that's just becoming hot and it's new and it's innovative.
Now, how did that startup even exist? Like, what were they thinking?
They were thinking it's
they were thinking, I'm going to get bought out by you guys at some point. That's
probably.
Why they started.
Probably.
Like, why were they solving that problem?
They had some people who came from very strong speech backgrounds, and these are people who had actually created technology around speech and voice, and twice already sold companies. So I'm sure this group of people, this was their exit in the end.
Do you know how many voice people I have on my payroll and none of them came up with this idea?
Good point.
We're gonna talk after the
Good
show.
Point.
So you're out there looking for technologies like that, organizations that are solid, properly backed to acquire.
Mm-hmm.
You will be in the process of and have been
Absolutely.
In other chapters of your life finding people that maybe should acquire. Had you just by serendipity had you been working with a company that's in the voice biometrics
That's right.
and you guys got to know each other, that would have been all great. But did you guys hang out do you guys go to the same parties? You get invited to the same stuff or I don't know. Do you even know each other?
It's certainly a small town. We were just talking in the lobby and about things we have in common and the venture firms that you know, the company she mentioned earlier. And,
right.
You know, ATDC, there's a company called Pendrop Security, which
absolutely
should,
no Pendrop.
You know, that
absolutely.
Kind of
no, they're
the
a competitor, actually, of this
yeah.
company, a small competitor for
That's
budget
right.
more than
that
they
fits,
are.
Anything. That right. fits in that world. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
And I'm on the board of a small venture-backed startup from another tech firm here in Atlanta called Higher IQ that's about doing recruiting software mm-hmm. for for call centers, or at least about helping organizations, mostly call centers, go in and make sure they're actually hiring the best people early in the process. So it does continue. It's a lot of the same people that all work together. This is the chairman of the board was the CEO of Witness, which is the company that we sold to Verint. So
you hang out with some of the same crowd?
Absolutely.
You guys will go to, you might slide by a startup riot or check out the ATDC guys and see each other.
Yeah, things like Venture Atlanta are doing a great job targeting more than just venture capitalists, trying to bring all the interested parties together. You know, there's lots of networking events, CEO council and things that aren't aimed just at the startup community. It's a broader... Yeah,
and TAG does a fabulous job of that in Atlanta. They really do.
Metro Chamber.
The Technology Association of Georgia
does
a great job of bringing the technology companies together and then other interested parties who are interested in being part of the technology community. You don't have to actually be a technology company, but in the tech community, it's really a strong organization to bring everyone together. Another organization I'm a part of that I find extremely interesting is the Alpharetta Technology Commission. So Alpharetta, the mayor of Alpharetta, has gotten very serious about bringing and focusing on how to make Alpharetta the high-tech choice of organizations that want to move to Atlanta or move within Atlanta into Alpharetta. So they're very focused on, do we have the high-tech infrastructure? Do we have the high-tech business community? There are over 600 high-tech companies in Alpharetta alone.
In Alpharetta.
Wow,
yes.
That's amazing.
Yes. So, and it's a very, they've done a really nice job of bringing the community together and focusing on how to make sure that we get the word out that Alpharetta is focused on high tech and how to, you know, make high tech successful.
And you're part of that commission?
Mm-hmm.
Would you be willing to come back in and talk about that commission as a whole? Because I wasn't familiar with that. I'd like to learn more.
Sure, absolutely. It might be interesting to bring Mayor David Bell Ives in. He's really, you know, right. He's driving. It's really great
to
see.
Wow, 600. That's amazing.
I have no idea.
Did you know that?
Absolutely.
Probably knew that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why I don't run the fund.
See, in high tech, we know these things.
600. I mean, that's how many are there in all of the metro area?
All I know is outside of Alpharetta, surrounding Alpharetta, meaning within some reasonable period of space, there's another 300. So that's just in North Atlanta.
Wow.
So I don't know in all of it. Do you know in all of Atlanta?
You know,
I'm sure
it depends on how you define it, right? Where you cut off technology, but certainly several thousand.
Thousands,
yeah. You'd have to think.
So what do you need most, and how can Mark Seeley help? Who hasn't even been on the show yet? Welcome to the show, Mark.
He's working on his idea right now.
Actually, Mark and I are talking. He told me that Verint's one of his prospects. So.
All right, great. So, yeah, what do you need and want most? And seriously, how can we help? And I think one of the ways that we can help is I want to do what we were talking about. Yeah.
So from Verint's perspective, we're focused on customer engagement technology. So things that are around helping organizations when they engage with their customers. And so definitely insight into, I'm always asking for people, if you've got insight into new firms or young firms or firms that are interested in providing solutions around that kind of technology, I'm always looking for that. Obviously, we have a lot of good customers here in Atlanta that help us provide sort of that next level of innovation and thought around what we should be doing differently, either building it ourselves or going out and looking for technology that we should be buying and putting into our portfolio.
Now, you have customers all over the world, though,
mm-hmm.
right? But some of them are here in town.
Exactly, both, yes.
All right, well, we'll get them in here. We'll talk with these folks. So let's leave our listeners with some coordinates. What's the best way for them to reach out, learn more, maybe have a substantive conversation with you or someone on your team?
Okay, well, the best way to probably reach at Verint is to go to www.verint.com and hit contact and ask for more information, and it'll end up back in my lap depending on what the issue is or
and then but if you're that smaller early stage company, that's the place to go to engage?
No, actually, very good point. If you're that's only if you're interested in Verint. If you're interested in the company at large, as a potential acquisition target, probably nancy.treister, and that's treister.com. That's easy to remember.
That's handy.
Exactly. And then I'd love to hear what it is people have to say.
Well, this is fun. This ought to be like a 4-hour show. Yeah. But for now, we're going to wrap up the segment. But we're quite sincere. We're going to have you back, and we're going to do more of this. This is a fun show, and the best part is yet to come. It's time for our headliner. We have with us the Grand Poobah.
Wow.
pressure.
No pressure. The Grand Poobah, the president and senior partner of Intellinet, Mr. Mark Seeley. How you doing, man?
Doing great. Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, we are delighted to have you. You've been very patient. I've seen you taking notes, nodding your head. I don't know if you're interested or not, but you really acted very interesting. So.
No, very. It's actually very very cool. We've worked with a lot of these companies at ATDC, and our services really go all the way from the large companies like Coca-Cola, Weather Channel, Siemens, Delta, et cetera, all the way down to startups. So we've helped companies out at ATDC with their business plans and tech build, like Preparis was one of the ones that we started their portfolio on, a great company here in town. And actually Witness Systems was a large client of ours before they get bought. So it's cool. It's excited to see how these folks are joining from all areas, from strategy, technology, and then really acquisitions long term. It's great.
So is it consulting? Is it services that you primarily provide?
Yep. So Intellinet's really geared around management consulting, which is really around business consulting, and Microsoft-centric for the most part, technology services. So we started in the early days, about 1993, about 20 years ago, in the early genesis of Microsoft back office, things like when email was the hot thing. Now it's obviously evolved much, much greater than that. But really anything Microsoft in the back office, SQL to customer development, to BI to portals, all those things that corporations run their business on, and we were working with Witness around their BI strategy, is really what we do. We do it for large corporations, international corporations, about 1,000 customers here in the East Coast, and it's been fun.
Now, are you the one that does most of the selling and marketing, or do you have a team?
We've got about 8 people that are across the East Coast that work with our customers in a direct capacity. So they'll go calling on and building relationships, understand what the business strategy is for like a Coca-Cola or a Delta or a Verint, and then really aligning with them on both their technology strategy but also their business strategy. So we look at them and say, what are their KPIs that they need to be able to drive their business, their key performance indicators for their board, and then how technology can help to enable their business drivers.
So here's my question. That all sounds marvelous. I'm just trying to figure out, how do you get the conversation? You just say, look, I know Nancy. And my name is Mark, and I want a meeting. I mean, how do you get that conversation going with these really large...
Aren't they bombarded by consultants?
Yeah, they are. They are. Yeah, and really, a lot of the groups are. They're simple. I mean, a CIO or a CMO won't take the call. So it's a lot of it is network. We've got guys that really aren't off the bus. I'm a background of Accenture and Anderson Consulting, so it's a lot of guys just out of school. But our average tenure is about 18 years, and so it's folks that really understand the community, that have been in the marketplace...
And they have relationships, and they've done good work, and they've served on in some of these other organizations.
Yeah, it's very service-centric and very value-centric. So, and we've got a good reputation here in the Southeast and the East Coast towards delivery, and so we've been blessed to be able to continue that reputation going.
Now, when you started, were you always Microsoft-centric?
Yeah, we started really purely as a technology play. I mean, it was really the idea of taking this unified inbox with email and voicemail and faxing to large corporations. I think Bell South and Delta and Coca-Cola were big early customers of ours. And then obviously as IT continued to get more and more complex, we had that broader spectrum. But our customers are the ones that really encouraged us to get into the business strategy and consulting side. They saw the excellence of what we were doing on the technology side and said, you'd be a lot more valuable to us as the marketplace evolves to be integrated with our business strategy and our IT strategy and digital marketing strategy by tying business and technology together. So that's worked out well. And the nice thing too, tying all this together, we've worked with a lot of groups like the Weather Channel and Coca-Cola have venture arms. They have really time, money, people set aside for strategy around innovation, both internal as well as for the venture community. It's awesome to be able to work with them. And one of the offerings that we have is around innovation management framework that really helps to captivate or sort of collect and sort of farm and then prioritize the ideas from some of these strategy houses within a Coca-Cola or an Elavon or whatever.
So you're enabling, facilitating what these two guys were talking about in that first segment about large enterprise really getting in and supporting that.
Right. Absolutely.
And you know about this, or is this news to you?
I do. And to his point, everyone assumes that it's the startup that needs coaching going into that meeting. And that's not true, right? You know, the large companies need help knowing how to engage with those small companies, picking an appropriate starting point, you know, and an appropriate engagement and a way to get started with working with those startups. So absolutely, both groups need you know, help pulling that off.
And I'd say even for some of the startups that we work with, we have also in this strategy consulting, we'll do anything from definition of a pitch sheet to how to sort of go to venture capital. What are they trying to ask for? Defining what their market is. But really also some of them directly know we're going to get bought. We want to be bought by Verint or by Coca-Cola or AT&T.
So they know that going in they're creating their business plan. That's their strategy. They know the end point.
They better be right then.
Yeah, exactly. And so sometimes that's obviously a very focused and sometimes a very naive perspective. Yeah. And so we try to broaden it to, again, what was said earlier. What is the market? It's got to be a large enough market. And candidly, if you have the right market, the right message, then there's going to be people that find value, whether that's large corporations or smaller boutique startups.
Now, 20 years ago when you were starting with Microsoft-centric stuff, that seemed like probably a great idea. Yeah. Nowadays, is it still a great idea?
It is. Actually, Microsoft, especially with their new CEO that just got announced probably a couple weeks ago, Satya Nadella, he came up from the R&D ranks and obviously has a tech perspective or a product management perspective. But one of his famous quotes over the last probably week or two when he got announced was really – he said, really, the marketplace doesn't value our past. Everything is about innovation. So he was in the whole cloud strategy perspective. You see all the big companies like Oracle and IBM and any large company is really focusing on how the cloud can revolutionize both their cost structure, their ability to go attract customers, and really, cut costs at the same time. And so he's all about the cloud. It's sort of a huge transformation in large corporations, as well as, the cool thing for startups is they can start this idea generation sort of coding, if you will, within days because they can go to a Azure or Amazon Web Services and all the infrastructure is already there. They're renting it. They're leasing it. They're not having to get the high-end venture money, right, that they would have to do in the past. Yeah. They're already on business value strategy and prototypes. And so it's just a hot space. IT is great in Atlanta. And Microsoft's one of the leaders across that industry.
Now, through the whole 20-year existence, were you always like, we're always Microsoft. Like,
it was key for a competitive advantage. So we grew pretty quickly and very succinctly because of that message of being the rock stars across the whole stack.
So you're betting on Microsoft.
We were on the early days, and we still are. We've done a lot now as as mobile is hot. Obviously, we're doing a lot of things with Apple and Android and HTML5 are the key avenues for how do you go and tackle those things. And some of that disparity on how code is done, that's just more of a tool. In the end, it's the strategy. So that's really where we said to some degree, and really when you look at the idea of where the marketplace is going, and I was fortunate enough to be sort of highlighted in a magazine, a Redmond Channel magazine, that sort of focuses on the 640,000 partners worldwide. And it was their worldwide strategy partner guy, and they said, here's this guy's name, Phil Sorgen, and entrepreneurs like Mark Seeland. I'm like, what? This is crazy. But really the thought was, and the statement that I had was pretty clear. It was the idea that the SIs, or the systems implementers, really you need to change. All those partners need to change their mindset to be a different type of an SI, which we call solution innovators. And the mindset there is that the infrastructure, the technology or platform that all of us in the channel really made our living on, that's going to really go to a cloud-based, almost rental-based model.
You got to let that go. Emotional connection right?
We still do it, but really you have to evolve into solutions. What are the key offerings that you have that can impact the business of your customers and transform their businesses? And then what's the innovation that you can bring, whether it be, a startup or a venture lab or a mainline business to add value to your customer base?
So I got to ask a couple questions about this magazine spread, one of which is, did you go with French cuffs?
It was a shock. I don't know. Marketing just sent over a picture, and I saw it without any understanding. But
was that cool, being featured in a magazine, or is this old hat for you?
No, it's always cool. We've had a lot of neat awards and whatnot, but this was really, really neat. And again, Microsoft has been a huge partner for us. We're grateful for the partnership, and it's been a good joint venture in that regard.
Now, speaking of awards, you guys were named one of the best places to work. How do you guys pull that off?
Well, that too is probably the coup d'etat for us this past year. There's been a lot of neat stuff going on. But Consulting Magazine ranks the top 15 or so small businesses or small firms in the nation across all verticals, technology, legal, marketing, et cetera. And we had just a great honor. We sort of went after with thousands and thousands of other firms here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And really they saw what we were trying to do. We had this initiative about 3 years ago that we've had lots and lots of awards from Microsoft, and it was really technology centric for a long while. That said, great place to work, great value. about 50 of them, 50 awards, national, worldwide, and regional. But we said, in the end, we've got great people. Let's really have a best firms initiative internally and do everything on purpose towards, you know, HR, excellence by design, and strategy and sales. And so when they did, it was just great because it is a really great place to work with. We get the opportunity to work with anything from venture capital all the way up to the large corporations, and it's a lot of fun.
And you guys have made a concerted effort to make an investment not only in other enterprise, but and in growing your own business, but also in community and in charity. And that's really, that's part of your value system. Yep. Speak to that a little bit, if you would.
Well, yeah. I mean, a lot of companies obviously start with a mission statement or purpose or, you know, core values. And ours is obviously the same. So we started with the idea of stewardship, and purpose statement was to glorify God in all that we do and to be a good steward of all that's entrusted to us. And that stewardship principle is not only leading our clients and sort of being accountable to what we do and having a passion for what we do with integrity, but the last, you know, the core value is around service. And it's not the professional services type of serving our customers. It's service that leads to a lasting legacy. And so our founder, Frank Bell, great friend of mine and my partner, really said there's one thing that's going to be true regardless of what happens, is that Intellinet will come and it will go. It will close its doors at some point. Every person that comes through it will come and go. The thing that's going to be key is what type of an impact will we make in our community. And so from the early days, 20 years ago, we started off the Intellinet Foundation with the purpose of giving back both in time and money and effort. And we've had the good fortune of giving over $250,000 to local charities.
Wow.
And it's just been great. We serve a lot. We take days off and half days to volunteer at Habitat and Tool Bank and food banks and stuff like that.
And that's encouraged and rewarded, or at least embraced, yeah, by your organization. It's not like I'm being crazy and causing a lot of stress if I want to, yeah, go for a half a day and go help
out. We can't do it all the time. We do have a business to run. But it's the fabric of what we do. And so, right, we also try to do it in creative ways. One of the cool things that our marketing group came up with several years ago, about 5 to 7 years ago, was during the holidays, the Christmas time, we, you know, a lot of customers get fruitcake or wine or get, you know, Bucket Life, and those are all great things. But we decided not to give out gifts to our customers, but in lieu of it, we allow our whole employee base to vote on three charities that are impactful to them, whether it's cancer or lupus or diabetes or whatever, or Save the World or whatever it is, right? But those are the charities that we then send out to our 5,000 or 10,000 different customers, prospects, partners, and then they choose who they want to have a donation or a charity donation each year.
Nice.
And it's tens of thousands of dollars type per year that, in essence, we give money to charity on their behalf. And we just get a lot of good feedback. And it's not about the marketing of it. It's just really a core element of who we are. And, you know, it's one small way that we give back.
So this is a longer conversation for a different time, but I still just want to plant the seed, because we were having this conversation at lunch, Lee and I, and I don't think you and I haven't figured out yet, but how to recruit for, hire for character, which is kind of, yeah, related to this. Do you guys feel like you've cracked the code on that? Do you have some like magic spreadsheet method for?
Yeah, great question. I mean, really, in professional services, you know, our industry is all about people. I mean, obviously, we come in with accelerators and solutions and IP and accelerators, you know, for process and technology. But this is a people-based business. So, you, yeah, know, you'd say, hey, the South is all full of good people and, yeah, Mother Earth and all that fun stuff. But in the end, we have a fairly rigorous, it's probably 6 to 7 different interviews that we do. And it's on purpose, different days, different times, calls, phone, in person, et cetera, just to be able to get a perspective of who are you as a person and what you're doing. And references are key, but I mean, it's our reputation, and it's what we do, and so we don't need to be the largest company in the world. We just want to have a great reputation and deliver with excellence, and that's the goal.
Now, what are some of the questions you ask?
Boy, I think it's really situational. So we obviously have your classic interview questions, whether it's for sales or for technology. But one of the key things that we do, because our theme is really around obviously service, leadership, innovation, and impact, we often, one of the key things is just give them a pen and a whiteboard and say, tell us about something you're passionate about, an architecture you just did, something, and just see if a spark happens, see what their relational, yeah, skills are, their leadership skills, sell us on it, tell us on it. Because really, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to lead. It's not a contractor mentality that says, you know, hey, here's exactly what to go do it, and it's, you know, it's X dollars versus Y dollars. you put the value on the creativity, the stewardship, the leadership. And if those, the guys, you know pretty early on if they have it or if they don't on the whiteboard exercise, but that's one of the elements.
I'm stealing that. That's a good
that
idea.
That's a fantastic idea, right?
I'll show you my whiteboard.
I like that.
And they either have to be incredibly creative or they're genuinely relying on actual experience, which is a lot of what you want to get
to. And actually,
right?
You know, some of the folks, if we look at the idea of our mainline services, obviously we have strategy consultants. So these are guys and gals that have been ex-CIOs or CMOs or VP of technology or PMO lead or ITIL lead. And so they understand their trade well, and those folks will do well because they've been used to management. You have some folks that are business strategy or business analysis or whatever else. The further you go downstream, a quality assurance lead or a deep architect may be more of a left-brain thinker of analytical and not that relational. And they're an amazing architect or a QA lead that simply just the T's are
Crossed.
Yeah. Eisen. I get that confused all the time.
We know what brain you are.
Thank you for being here. So those I's and T's are done, right? But as long as they understand and they can whiteboard or they can talk about it, again, some of the architects are great. They're great drawers. They're creative, and they sort of understand what's going on. And if you ask open-ended, philosophical, relational questions, they're going to fail. But really, the ones that do great are the ones, the architect-minded folks.
So real quickly, I wanted to hear a little bit, kind of get a report on the CIO summit that you guys with Microsoft and all that.
Exactly.
You hosted it. Did you put it all? This was your event?
Yeah. So classically, whether it's Microsoft or Salesforce or Oracle, they bring in all their customers in some cases, but a lot of times customers and partners. And they have a CIO summit in Redmond once a year. And we've taken a lot of our larger customers there, and that's great. And it's 3 days, and it's a lot of expense to check out of the office and take your team out there to understand the strategy of Microsoft as a key partner. So what we said to them was, hey, give us a shot to be able to trial balloon this idea of flying all of your executives and product owners of Azure and Office 365 and strategy folks to Atlanta. And so, it's a big ask. But they brought in worldwide national leaders of all these groups. And we last year we started off, and this year was our second annual. We probably had about 150 CIOs register and come. And
what did y'all talk about?
I can't tell you that. It's under
NDA. Secret.
No. It was really the theme that really, again, they can get Microsoft contacts even on the web, right? So it's all about the strategy, innovation, and technology roadmaps that they can then run their business. So what are the cool features? What are the trends? What are other people doing? It's a lot of Gartner, Forrester, IDC type reports. It's the strategy questions. It's around sort of licensing and how do they implement it within A versus B type parameters. But it was really CIO to CIO. It's not a lot of vendors. It's on purpose, very focused towards how do they run their business effectively. And one of the great assets that we had as well is that the GCLA, or Georgia CIO Leadership Association, is one of our key sponsors for that as well. So they invited all their folks here from Georgia. But we had folks from Florida, Boston, Charlotte, Carolinas, South Carolina fly in for this event. And it was just a huge success. And Microsoft said, this is probably one of the best events the execs had been to all year. So I was like, that's pretty cool.
And but were other Microsoft partners invited? Or
no, it was just Intellinet. So we've had the good fortune of being Microsoft's Partner of the Year last year and the year before, Customer SAT Award last year and the year before, and just a bunch of just great relationship with Microsoft where we said, hey, this is our idea, our event, and we'll be the ones hosting it. So they were respectful, but it's been great. And again, the Georgia CIO Leadership Association was a great avenue, and I know Jay was with you guys earlier talking on the program. So Jay Farrow from the American Cancer Society.
Yep. He was just here a few weeks ago.
Yeah, exactly.
And if somebody wanted to learn more about your organization?
So probably websites, the best way to do that, www.intellinet.com. And we'd love to help out and serve no matter what market you're in.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show today.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Technology Leaders.
Atlanta Technology Leaders is brought to you by Band of Coders. Band of Coders is a company of talented software developers who energize clients' projects and their development teams.